You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi, I'm Shovik Das.
I'm Leslie DeMonte.
And I'm Deepti Ahuja. You're listening to Mint Etc.
A podcast where we will talk about important developments in technology and how they will transform our lives, work and play as we know it.
Welcome back to Tech Cetera. This is, of course, your favorite tech podcast, if I can take the liberty of saying so myself, because it is my favorite tech podcast. I don't know if Deepti listens to it or not.
I have to edit it. I mean, get it edited. So obviously, I listen to it.
All our listeners right now, she is sitting in front of me with her smartphone and listening to a different podcast as we speak. But nevertheless, we also have Leslie with us. And this week, in fact, started on a very interesting note, because Monday morning between 9 a.m. to 10:45 a.m., in the space of an hour and 45 minutes, I heard at least 7 different stories of different types of cyber scams. People sending messages saying that money has been credited to your account by mistake, so please send it back to me. UPI scams, people saying, oh, can you send me the PIN to your account, and so on and so forth. A wide range of cyber scams, in fact, Deepti, Leslie. This seems to have become the order of the day. And last week, in fact, Ministry of Communications press conference, they unveiled a platform called Chakshu, where it's like a cybercrime reporting portal where they want to make things easier for people to report cybercrimes. And they have a wide drop list of the kind of scams that you might have faced. It was a good laugh between the IT minister and everyone in the room, where he was demoing the product and he clicked on the list and he was like, as you can see, this is a very endless list of the kind of scams that you can face today.
Correct.
But that got all of us thinking, and in fact, it's been something that we've been reporting on for years now, that the range of scams today range from very basic, pretty much no technology, so to speak, and instead playing on a person's psyche, to really sophisticated phishing scams that use AI, voice morphing, and that's something that people I know have faced. So what about you guys? I'm sure you guys also hear a lot of people speaking about this and, you know, facing such issues.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. So I really like graphic design and I really like, you know, getting into all of that, getting an update on different kinds of fonts and everything. There was a scam where you couldn't make out, there was a difference in the font, right, from the of address, the IP address. There was just a slight difference in the font and you could not make out, a regular person could not make out that these are just two different fonts. It was that similar, and the scams are just getting more and more creative. Absolutely. By the day.
Absolutely. And Leslie, you would have also, I mean, you know, we've reported multiple times on how AI voice morphing and things like that can also lead to a wider range of sophisticated scams. So have you faced any of these personally or people around you?
I wouldn't go that far to say that, okay, AI, because I'm not even getting into the AI scams stuff. A simple thing like, you know, in the last few days, I think they have started using WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook, and all the other, you know, social media sites. Let's say, for instance, on WhatsApp, you start getting calls. So this call was from Bangladesh. 3 consecutive calls. I, of course, ignored all of them because it was a plus 880 code.
Right.
Now, these are codes that are known for scams. So they'll call you on your WhatsApp. If you're in a good mood, you may want to pick it up. If you pick it up, there'll be some, you know, I mean, they know, they can see it. Like most of us have put up on WhatsApp, we have put up our photographs. So they can see if it's a guy, then you'll have a female at the other end. If it's a female, then you'll have a guy at the other end. So that's typical kind of thing where they'll ask you. And it's a very kind of sincere call. So the call will be very honest and it will ask you, are you interested in a part-time job?
Right.
Typically, a lot of Indians are interested in part-time jobs.
Right.
So, you know, I think Indians love to moonlight. So these gigs are always available. So they'll say, okay, fine. Tell me more about it. So then they'll say, okay, fine. You know, we want to pay you XYZ per word, for instance. They're pretty smart. They know what you're doing. Or they'll ask you, if nothing else. And I think most people are pretty stupid that they'll end up telling you, you know, what they're doing and what they're not doing. So right. They'll tell you, okay, fine. If you write a story for us or something, we'll pay you. So give us your UPI code, give us your bank account. We want to transfer the money into that. So these are red flags. I'm surprised that people, you know, don't jump up when these red flags are presented. Like, for instance, of course, this is an audio podcast, so I can't show some images. But just yesterday, again, I got a... Now, so that was from a Bangladesh number. You get it from Morocco. You get it from Brazil. You get it from... beg your pardon?
Estonia as well.
Estonia. So, I mean, they're different kind of countries, but you also get them from Indian numbers. Right. Now, the interesting part was, I got two images that needed to be downloaded and one link to the YouTube. Now, this is very credible given that we are journalists. Typically, people, you know, a lot of PR people send us this. And many people are not in our contact book. So they would easily, you know, send us a thing. But it's very interesting. I saw the name of the person. A very odd kind of name, which did not gel with anything of the images, nor the YouTube stuff. And there was absolutely no indication. Now, these also should be red flags when there's so much ambiguity in the kind of messaging. And the third part would be, see, when we're talking about AI and all that kind of stuff, earlier, if you remember, we used to get a lot of these Nigerian scams.
Nigerian stuck in airport transit.
Yeah.
And they used to say, like, my mother is ill. I'm a refugee. I'm one of those, sort of a king of Morocco or something, and I have to transfer so much money. I'll give you a certain percentage. You remember all those kind of things. So typically they were too good to be true. And when something is too good to be true, then typically it is too good to be true. But we still fall for those kind of things.
Right.
But now with ChatGPT, with Bing, Bard, with Claude, with Perplexity, etc. So earlier what used to happen, they used to make a lot of mistakes.
Right.
Yeah.
And it would sound very rudimentary.
So now with ChatGPT, their messaging has become very sophisticated. So it's very hard to say whether, you know, this guy is a scamster or a genuine person or something. So I would say AI, while it is helping in fraud detection, it is helping in a lot of other stuff. It's making our life easy. It's also making our life, you know, pretty troublesome.
Yes, absolutely.
Same would apply for deep fakes. The same would apply for voice cloning. On the one hand, you can get Shah Rukh Khan give his Diwali message to, you know, small shopkeepers.
Cadbury's platform. That was
revolutionary, apparently.
Yes, we all reported on it, on how cool that ad seemed.
Yeah, it was.
But Deepthi doesn't rely on Shah Rukh Khan's AI messages because Deepthi uses the robot AI assistant, of course. The rabbit AI assistant.
All right, I'm going to...
robot one. But in fact, you know, these product preferences that you speak about on open platforms and anything, in fact, that you put out openly seems to be used as a tool for your scam. Because recently...
That's true.
In fact, one of my relatives had put out a tweet saying that this was a senior citizen who had booked a train ticket and they were assigned an upper berth.
Yeah.
So they were complaining on Twitter that, you know, this is really difficult and this shouldn't have happened.
Right.
But in continuation to that, she instantly got calls from a couple of people in terms of people who reached out to her, a couple of random phone calls. And they said that I'm calling on behalf of the Ministry of Railways. And we have noted your tweet from the office of the minister. And we want to ask you about resolving this complaint of yours, which seemed pretty legitimate, except that it was a random number.
So elaborate.
And they were precise. They were like, your name is so-and-so, your age is so-and-so, and you have raised this complaint on behalf of this XYZ PNR number. And, you know, we want to understand this complaint. The only giveaway was that at the very end, they were like, we are sending you a particular link. You'll have to open that.
Oh.
And since you paid by UPI, you'll have to enter your UPI PIN to verify that you paid. And that was just that, like, you know, we were probably aware enough that you don't need to verify your UPI transaction by entering your PIN. But a lot of people would fall for it, right? A lot of people who
are
distracted, who probably don't have enough information.
Absolutely.
Who've not done enough of these transactions before, who don't have that experience. I mean, it's so easy to scam people.
I'm saying even if they have done those transactions, sometimes you fool them into thinking like, okay, this is a new thing. They can make it very convincing. So the point is you have to always, be aware that there's a person out to, pick your wallet every moment. These are the online wallet pickers.
Yes, but still, I mean, even when like a human is not involved in the scam, if someone is not on the other side of the call, and that thing that I was just going back to, that just a change in the font,
right?
And you can't make out what website you are on. Right? Just a slight change.
Absolutely.
Everything else has been replicated exactly the way the original website is. Everything else has been replicated. It's just that there is a font change. That in itself is such a shocker. You, a regular person, just can't be expected to catch hold of these scams.
Definitely. And general consensus says that what most of these scammers do is that they play on the psyche of the people they are targeting.
Yeah.
You might be caught in a vulnerable moment, or even if you're not vulnerable, like you said, you're distracted, or even when a lot of people have this notion that, anything goes wrong with a digital transaction, I might lose my money.
Hmm.
And the moment you kind of call them and tell them that, your money is stuck somewhere, or your transaction is stuck somewhere, or we can't verify your request, you have to put this pin in. General tendency among people is to get somewhat intimidated as a first reaction comply.
Right.
And that is what probably makes this conversation go beyond the technology, as what I feel, that it's not just a tech answer, because UPI as such, it's not UPI's fault that UPI is being used for this.
Yeah. It reminds me of this true crime sort of episode that we did on one of our podcasts.
Right.
And it was basically a Delhi police case.
Right.
And this girl, she was just, she found someone on a dating app. They started.
Yes.
That scam is also so, it's so out there. It's happening to almost everyone, left, right, center.
Yes.
And it's even more embarrassing to then let your friends and family know that this is something that has happened.
Yes.
Believe you me, the Delhi police was after that guy for I don't know, 1.5-2 years.
They caught the guy. There's in fact an Amazon show on this particular
Correct. So it was just, it's just so, when you say, people can play on other people's psyche.
Yeah.
This is the...
That's what it is.
Easiest, the lowest hanging fruit, I guess.
Leslie, do you feel that there is a tech solution to any of these issues?
No, not really. I mean, in a sense that what I find hard to believe most of the time. First, I think at the outset, let us make it clear that these crimes are going to get increasingly sophisticated with time.
Okay. Right.
So you are going to find it very hard to separate the wheat from the chaff, if I were to put it that way, or, from the real from the unreal. It's going to be increasingly hard as we go, because we'll be using AI, deepfakes, voice cloning. We'll be using all the other kind of methods, sophisticated phishing methods, etc. So you're going to find it harder. But having said that, basic rules. Now, for instance, on UPI. Okay, now if you realize that most of the scams are happening on UPI, then probably also people should put in more effort, to understand how UPI is done. Or at that point in time, before, clicking on a link, say for instance, RBI has time and again, put out these diktats that do not reach out to you. We do not ask you for your passwords. We do not ask you for your bank account. Banks also have been, regularly telling the customers, but nobody seems to listen.
Hmm.
Yeah, sometimes I'm in fact actually tempted to call back the scammers on their phone numbers just to have a conversation.
what goes on in your head, huh?
Yeah, I want to just have a chat. But unfortunately, they're pretty quick at disposing of their phone numbers. And of course, there are multiple ways.
Exactly. And for all you know, the numbers will also be IP. This time.
They are all IP driven.
Yeah, they all. Many of them are spoofed. Many of them are. You'll never be able to trace those numbers.
Yes. Unfortunately, it's very difficult to have a conversation with a scammer. It's
honest one at that, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like have a genuine conversation on, man, listen,
So there was this journalist from The Guardian, I think. So he spent a lot of time, seeing these kind of WhatsApp calls. So he started receiving these calls, answering them, was having a conversation, etc. But of course, even he had to stop when they were asking for the bank accounts. So that was a time when, you know, they had to be a little careful. So there's a whole article that he published after that. And of course, the sort of not so savory side of it is, once you finish those calls, then you'll get, you know, a host of other spam calls.
Yeah, you will sort of be in the spam ecosystem. Our domestic Jamtara reporting was also, I guess, something very similar.
Right.
But enough of scams. Deepthi, what's happening this week? What's new that you've come across this week?
Well, there are a couple of things, and I'm sure that, you know, there are two very important announcements that you guys also want to talk about. But before maybe we get into that, I have been waiting to ask this question to you, Shovik, since space is your area of interest and specialization. So Voyager 1 has been sending back incomprehensible data, right? Mm. Incomprehensible code.
Right.
And this is something that really concerns NASA. Now, do you have an opinion on that? And why is it happening? I mean, you know, like Leslie said, fear of the unknown. We can come up with all sorts of, you know, different kinds of scenarios. But why do you think that this is happening?
So, firstly, I think it's a miracle that Voyager 1 is still functioning.
Right? Yeah.
1978 is when that space probe was launched.
Yeah.
And it crossed the Kuiper Belt sometime, I think, in the 90s, if I'm not wrong, or early 2000s. And it's outside our solar system. It's the farthest any man-made object has ever been, as far as we know. We don't know if
it's been flying for like 46 plus years now.
Yeah. So I think, but you know, the counter argument to this has been that space probes and space telescopes generally outlive the life that they're supposed to live.
Hmm.
You know, most telescopes you will hear that they were built with a 5-year lifespan and it's now 16 years and they're still functioning. Oftentimes it's because the instruments that are built, they are built to be robust. They're built to survive harsh conditions.
Right.
And if they can, as long as they have an energy source somewhere, they are capable of relaying back certain amount of information.
Mm.
For Voyager, as far as we are aware of Voyager, it's at this moment, it's unclear as to what environment it is likely in.
Right.
And Voyager's pings only give us an idea that it is still active and it is out there somewhere. And in fact, very interestingly, there are these space hunter communities who wish to sometimes go and find Voyager someday. So that's, of course, back into the science fiction territory.
Of course.
But I think, you know, garbled signals from Voyager could signal multiple things. Could signal, I think the reason why any scientist would be concerned is that it could signify some sort of interference with its instruments. And that interference, well, it can come from anything for that matter. It can come from unforeseen space weather that it has run into, some sort of radiation from a star, or it could have, it can signify anything.
Right.
Yeah, but also think about the choice of words. You said garbled signals, okay?
Right.
There's a site called Futurism that says incomprehensible code.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah. So just think about it. It's what you say that gives you this kind of alarmist tendency. I could say garbled signals means, okay, the signals are garbled. And you end it and you say, yeah, that's okay. It's junk.
Yes.
It doesn't alarm you so much. Moment I say incomprehensible code, it says, okay, that's going to change. Right?
Yes. Yes.
So that's extremely important when we talk about the choice of words, the kind of stuff that we are talking about. It's It's important.
And I think in space reporting, this is very famous because, you know, if you go on Google right now and if you search asteroid near Earth, you will find at least 100 headlines that will tell you that there is a massive asteroid which is flying to Earth at, I don't know, 10 times the speed of sound, that is going to almost crash into Earth. Whereas in reality, it is at three times the distance as that between the Earth and the Moon.
Yeah.
So NASA certifies a certain space safe distance, with that safe distance radius from Earth. So any asteroid that comes in around this massive radius, it qualifies as a near Earth object, NEO.
Right.
And the moment it gets qualified as an NEO, publications put out headlines which say, "Beware, massive asteroid coming to Earth."
So what is the better, sort of publication to follow, or how?
Why don't we ask people to read Mint?
But you can always say, I think, go to authoritative sources, like there's Neil deGrasse, Brian Greene.
Popular Science is a very good option.
Yeah, and watch Discovery, there are some real good programs on that. You have the best of scientists coming on those things, talking about, things like astrophysics and talking about asteroids and giving you a very good idea of how it works and how it doesn't work, whether an asteroid can be deflected from planet Earth, whether we have the technology and all that kind of stuff.
True, very true. But back home, there are certain announcements that have been made in the past week that we want to probably quickly touch upon before we end this episode. Shovik, you want to take the lead on
that? Yes, a couple of cabinet announcements, in fact, of much interest, Leslie. The first one being the semiconductor fab approval. India will now have its own chip fab. And it's going to come up in Dholera in Gujarat, where 4 years from now, we're going to start making 28 nanometer 50, 55 and 90 nanometer chips. And a lot of optimism around it. There's also another chip fab proposal which has not gone to the cabinet for now, but it's even bigger. But everybody is speaking about how this is, essentially the start of India's semiconductor industry. Not accounting for SCL Mohali, of course, which is now being looked at as an R&D fab. The second cabinet announcement is the 10,372 crore India AI mission, where the center wants to establish a public-private partnership to build 10,000 GPUs, which will help Indian researchers, academia, and startups build their own AI models and test them using this public infrastructure. It's essentially the same as India's supercomputing infrastructure, and the AI compute is going to be merged with that. And they're going to be offered to academicians and scientists. And India is also building a data sets platform, probably going to be merged with Bhashini.
So
India will have its own data sets, own AI model, own AI compute. They want to build an own marketplace and so on and so forth. So two very interesting cabinet announcements, which has given cause for much optimism across many quarters. Leslie, how do you read these announcements?
So, I've always been a skeptic about this. So I've been covering like semiconductor last 20 years. I've been writing reports on that. I've seen the kind of history of what happened to the semiconductor. So here's my 2 pence. I think it's a step in the right direction. In fact, actually, the recent edit that I wrote for Mint also is the same thing.
Right.
It's about that only. So it's clearly a step in the right direction, a much needed step. We should just get our act together. 20 nanometers, 28 nanometers or otherwise doesn't really matter now at this point in time. Basically, the kind of chips that get into your mobiles, into your PCs and all, these are anything below 10 nanometers. So they're all, they're basically the 5 to 7, 3 nanometers, even 2 nanometers. So the technology has gone way beyond us. I don't think we'll ever be able to set up those kind of things. Maybe 10, 15 years from now, because the gestation period for any of these fabs itself is about a minimum of 5 to 7 years. So 3 to 5 years, 5 to 7 years, depending on the size of the wafer fabs or the nanometers, the chips. that these nanometers are definitely, along with our large semiconductor ecosystem, the design ecosystem that we already have, it will strengthen that. So clearly, there is a benefit. But look at the outlay. The outlay is 1.5 trillion. Okay.
Right.
So 1.5 trillion rupees. Now, if you look at China, China has got what is known as the big fund. They have invested about $25 billion just in this, I think just very recently. And over the years, I think almost $100 billion. You look at the US, it's almost $50 billion. So these guys are like way, way, way ahead as far as investments are concerned. Our investment is $1.1 billion.
Right.
That includes the 91,000 crore of the Tata.
The Tata and the PSMC fab.
Exactly. So that's one part of it. But as I said, it's a step in the right direction because we need to move forward and not backwards. And that is what we're doing at this point in time. Baby steps perhaps, but needed. So I think let us get our act together. I think it's extremely important. On the AI front, it's the same observation. You know, on an AI front, when you allocate about 10,000 crore, it's not, I mean, it's okay. I mean, it's a baby step. It's not very impressive because look at it. You're talking about creating a kind of a body that will handle your India LLMs. You already have a lot of LLMs. You have about 8 to 10 LLMs being done by private companies already, whether it is Kruthrim, whether it is Project Indus, whether it is AI for Bharat's Airavat, whether it is Sarvam's Open Hathi series, whether it is the Bharat GPT program, which has got this whole Hanuman foundation models on.
Yes.
You are going to build. So you already have a lot of stuff going on. What they require are GPUs, and which is what the government is trying to do with their 10,000 GPUs. Only problem out here is that the GPU is being used for training a model as opposed to inferencing. So for inferencing, you can easily use CPUs. You can use what are known as ASICs. So not too much of a headache out there. But for GPU, for training these models, foundation models, you require GPUs. The cost of an H100 by NVIDIA is something like $30,000.
Right.
So these are estimates, of course. They do not disclose the numbers. It depends on, how they... And they match it up with software, hardware, packages, etc.
Right.
So it is tough. I'm saying... step in the right direction. A lot more needs to be done. Government needs to be consistent on, things. And my belief is at least something is happening. Okay.
Right.
If you remember, absolutely. In 2018, you had the Niti Aayog draft on AI. We were way ahead of it. So we did a lot of things. India is part of the GPI stuff. As far as responsible AI, we are making the right kind of noises. Only a slight alarming thing is the recent, talk that India wants to regulate foundational models. Now, this is not something new because this is being done by the Chinese government. So Chinese government has about 40 LLMs that are government approved.
Right.
And, every LLM that gets out to the public or to enterprises has to be approved by the Chinese government. We have to ask ourselves whether we are going the Chinese way or we are going the US way or we are, using some kind of hybrid model. I think we need to be clear about that because otherwise there's going to be a rank confusion. I think you also wrote a piece recently.
Yes, I did. And I think there's, in fact, a lot of debate across quarters as to what is going to be our stance on data, on privacy, on AI, and so on and so forth. And that, in fact, calls for a completely separate conversation altogether.
Yes.
But on that note, I think we have spoken for quite a bit of time. So for this week, it's time to end. Thank you so much, Leslie, for taking time out. And thank you, Deepthi.
Welcome.
I am very sure that you...
Thank you for not pulling my leg. Please don't pull it. Please.
We have never done that for record. We have never done such things. However.
I don't think we have ever spoken about rabbits. You said you could probably buy some antelope sauce.
Yes. The antelope A1 might be a good choice for you. Pitch for startups to create a startup called Antelope.
Yes.
And on that note, it's time to end.
Doesn't know that there's a lion OS, a leopard.
Thanks. Thanks, both of you. Thanks.
The Leopard L1 could also be a choice for you. But on that note,
actually,
it's
a good choice.
Yes.
But yeah, on that note.
After the fourth attempt to end this episode, it is finally time to end. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, do write to us and do tell us what you liked and what you did not like about our episode. Thank you so much. That's it for this week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So folks, that's it for this episode. You are listening to Mint Tech Cetera. You can reach out to us on LinkedIn if you have any questions. Our handles are in the description.
This episode was produced by me, Deepti Ahuja. It was edited by Amrinder Singh. Catch you next week.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.